A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 67. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Edge of Darkness. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
A determined detective investigates the brutal murder of his own daughter. There is political intrigue and mysterious containers being transported through the night. There are strange activities going on in the dark corridors of power and the hidden places. This was a mini-series, Edge of Darkness, that ran in 1985. It was 6 50-minute episodes, and it ran on the BBC.
And this is a series that's been suggested to us by one of our listeners, by Sam from Australia, who last year emailed us and suggested we might consider Edge of Darkness. And so I think it makes it the second series that we've looked at, Brian, where it's come directly from a listener suggestion, which is quite fun.
Something like that, yeah. And it's great to have that some of the time, to get some input on some of these shows and include them. So that's great.
Absolutely. And it's Edge of Darkness is a very well-regarded show from British TV history. And it's quite interesting because it mixes a lot of elements. We're going to talk about a murder mystery, as you've already said, Brian, there's a political thriller going on. There's a nuclear conspiracy. And, of course, there's this question as to whether or not it is, in fact, science fiction genre and whether it fits into our remit here on British Invaders. But we're going to come back to that later on in our recording as we talk about some of those elements.
Absolutely. And there are some elements that are incorporated later in the drama in the last episode or two that do give us some cause to think about including it. But it's also it relates to things in such a way that it fits in enough that we decided we should cover it. So Ronald Craven is a Yorkshire police detective investigating election fraud in a miners' union. His daughter, Emma, is a physicist, and she is heavily involved in student politics and protests. And as they are returning home one night, and discussing some of these issues and the protest issues and so on and so forth, they are walking into the house when someone appears with a gun, and she steps out in front of her father, in front of Craven, and she is shot and dies in her father's arms almost instantly while the killer disappears into the night.
Yeah, that's right. And because of Ronald Craven's background as a detective, and a quite successful police detective, it's assumed by the police investigating the crime that this was an attempt on his life that his daughter happened to get in the way of. And at first, the most likely suspects seem to be from the long list of criminals that he's previously put in prison. So it seems likely that somebody would come back to get him for revenge for what he did to them earlier on. But as well as the police investigating Emma Craven's death, our detective Ronald Craven, her father, is going to investigate himself, which he's sort of given, I think, a sort of tacit leave to do so by his boss, who tells him that, you know, officially he's got nothing to do with the investigation, but unofficially he's to carry on and just keep the boss informed. And so he starts to look into the murder himself, obviously.
And that brings us into a very important element of this serial, which was Ron Craven dealing with his grief over losing his daughter. And part of the interesting thing here is that it is not some kind of revenge film or, you know, tough guy action hero kind of film. Craven is a very human character, and he is not looking for revenge. He's looking for answers. And that's what we find and what he finds gradually as the show goes along are some things about his daughter's secrets, what she was involved in, some of these student protest movement things going on, and so on. So there are some interesting layers that get unraveled as we go along.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of stuff that's going to come out. I mean, you know, there's the murky world of espionage. There's the nuclear industry. And as you say, Brian, there's some secrets of his daughters, which he'll learn as he goes along. Lots of stuff. And as you say, this very moving portrayal of grief in a television drama.
And lots of characters as well.
Lots of characters to get to, yes. There's quite a few, and they all play a part, don't they?
That's right. It's quite a complex story and program, and there are lots of characters that are involved, for sure. We already mentioned Ronald Craven, who is this real detective character. He even has the trench coat. He has a past history of working with informers and using interrogation techniques that were very sort of psychological, under your skin kinds of things, you know, very interesting and slightly odd kinds of things. He worked in Northern Ireland in the 70s and made friends and enemies doing that. So there is a lot here of him being the detective, but being sort of a sensitive character and not the tough guy, police detective, macho kind of character that this easily could be. It veers quite far away from that, and that was something that worked very well in this. Craven was the character seeking answers and seeking closure and seeking catharsis over his daughter's murder. And that was interesting. That was something that worked really well. Bob Peck was the actor who played Craven, and he really had been a stage actor before this, worked in the Royal Shakespeare Company for a number of years before this, and I think the National Theater as well, but very little television programming, later known for Jurassic Park, and unfortunately died of cancer when he was quite young in 1999. But a very strong and involving performance there from Bob Peck that really set the tone and stood things well for this entire serial.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, his determination to find the truth, but also, as we've also said, this portrayal of grief, very moving performance, really. And we've also mentioned Emma, his daughter, Emma Craven, who I think is a postgraduate physics student. As we've said, she's certainly involved heavily in student politics. And in fact, the first time we see her, she is chairing a political meeting at the college, which is actually being addressed by a real-life British politician, Michael Meacher. But she's also, we'll find, she's involved in environmental politics and environmental activism. And she belonged to a mysterious organisation known as Gaia. And very quickly, as part of his investigations, her father will find that his daughter, who he thought was a reasonably straightforward student, keeps a gun and a Geiger counter in her bedroom, which is revealed in the first episode. So there's obviously some mysteries about Emma Craven, which her father was unaware of.
And she is the entry into the whole set of nuclear issues and the conspiracies around nuclear issues that are so important to this serial.
Yeah, rather interestingly, she doesn't just disappear when she's murdered. She sort of appears to her father throughout the series. And I guess people have their own theories as to how that happens and whether she's actually a ghost, whether there's a mystical element to this, or whether it's just her father's, you know, mind, that he's just seen her in his mind, and that it's part of his grief and bereavement, that she appears to him and she talks to him. And he questions her about what was going on. So that's an interesting element to the whole show.
Yeah, it's quite ambiguous exactly what that is and how Emma Craven is appearing in front of Ron Craven. Is this something that is sort of supernatural / fantasy / science fiction happening there? Or is this something that is just him, just part of his mind?
And Emma Craven was played by Joanne Whaley, who would later become on become known as Joanne Whaley Kilmer when she married Val Kilmer. And again, a very early role for her, not much television before this. Shortly after Edge of Darkness, she'd go on to another very famous bit of British television, The Singing Detective, and then she went to Hollywood and made films like Willow and Scandal. So another actress that started off in a sort of British Invaders television show and went on to great things.
Yeah, it was an interesting performance that she put in. It was not a huge amount of screen time, but it was pivotal, and it worked quite well, I thought. I've enjoyed her presence in this serial.
And talking about enjoyable performances,
then we get to Darius Jedberg, played by none other than Joe Don Baker, who was one of a number of actors who made a career or a chunk of a career based on being an American working in England. So Darius Jedberg is a CIA agent stationed in the UK, a larger-than-life character with a very colorful past. He believes he's working for the good guys, regardless, that he's working for the forces of light. And we're not always too sure. He is quite clearly a loose cannon. He's someone who takes things into his own hands, who has done so much undercover work and been behind so many enemy lines that he's almost fighting against himself because he's been in so many groups working for so many different factions. And he befriends Craven and becomes very involved with what Craven is doing over time and sort of facilitates a lot of things. But as this character like Jedberg could only do, he becomes very involved in a hands-on way himself.
He's very exciting and he's very useful when the action starts to hot up, and him and Craven form quite an interesting partnership, don't they?
Yes, it's a bit of an oil and water thing that these two guys are definitely, they respect each other and they decide to work with each other and they're comfortable with that, but they are so very different. You have Craven, who is this sort of very quiet, introverted, at least introverted in his grief, type of person who is sort of subtle in how he does things, and the performance is quite subtle. And then you have Jedberg, who does everything to the nth degree and is, loud and hard drinking and hard living and, pushing everything to the furthest possible degree. Joe Don Baker, you might remember from a few James Bond films. He played a slightly similar CIA agent in GoldenEye and Tomorrow Never Dies, who was not as much of a loose cannon as Jedberg, but he played Wade in those two Bond films and definitely had a bit of a similar feeling there. And he was also a villain in The Living Daylights and has been in quite a few other films as well. So definitely now a recognizable face there to see in Edge of Darkness.
And then there's a few other characters we'll mention. If Jedberg represents the sort of American intelligence agency's interest in the nuclear secrets, then we have the British intelligence role, and that's played by two characters, Pendleton, played by the actor Charles Clay, and Harcourt, played by Ian McNeice. And as I say, they're British intelligence. They work in for the Prime Minister's office. And there are a couple of interesting characters who pop up from time to time to help Craven along or maybe to manipulate Craven. Their sort of interests and motives are not entirely clear to us. Pendleton is hinted at, he's former SAS, but he's also a very clever manipulator. And then Harcourt is like the brains of the pair. He's an intelligence analyst who seems to be fascinated in patterns and puzzles and trying to figure out what's going on. And they're an interesting couple. They add in a little bit of almost humour when they come along. There's a sort of wry smile when they appear on screen.
There is a bit of humour there, but it tends to be a little bit sort of dark humour. And there's a serious side to them, too, that adds a lot to it as well. They give you that contrast with Jedberg, where Jedburgh always wants to get his hands dirty and be the one who's right there on the front lines, Pendleton and Harcourt will not get their hands dirty, and they always stay behind the scenes.
And then one other character we'll mention, James Godbolt, who played by the actor James Watson, and he is the leader of the miners' union that you mentioned, Brian, that Craven is investigating at the very start of the first episode. And he's a strange character. He seems to be, at first glance, perhaps our first villain of the piece. And one of the consequences of Emma's murder is that Ronald Craven will be taken off the miners' election investigation, which seems to suit Godbolt. And so there's a possible motive there. And then he'll disappear from the story for a while. And it might seem to us that the miners' investigation was just a red herring. But like a lot of things that we'll be talking about in Edge of Darkness, it's far more complex than that. And he will return later in the show with a slightly different role, really, Brian.
Yes, you like a number of the characters and many of the story aspects, there are some layers there.
So, talking about the production, our production notes for Edge of Darkness, it was famously written by another sort of very successful British television writer called Troy Kennedy Martin, who is best known in Britain for being the co-creator and main writer on a show called Z-Cars, which was an extremely long-running and extremely successful British police television show that ran from 1962 all the way up until 78, and really was like the British police show for ages. Certainly when I was growing up, it was the main police show. But he also wrote some films, and a very famous British film, The Italian Job, and then an American war film, Kelly's Heroes, which had Clint Eastwood in it. So quite a long history of writing very successful projects. But after he'd finished with Z-Cars in 1978, he was a bit bothered that there was a lack of a political element to drama on British TV. And he felt there should be more sort of hard-hitting political writing. And of course, in the 80s, he was very much influenced by what was going on in the political landscape at the time. So he was influenced by Margaret Thatcher's government and the reaction to that, the worries about the nuclear industry and about nuclear waste and nuclear weapons, the people who opposed that sort of thing, like the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament and the protesters at a place called Greenham Common in England. And also by a scientist called James Lovelock and his Gaia theories about how the Earth would react to the environmental damage that we were wreaking on it. And he was putting all this together and coming up with an idea for a show, which initially he described as a story about a detective who turns into a tree. An interesting concept, which at that time he was titling Magnox after the name of a nuclear reactor. And that was about 1983 that he was coming up with this story.
He also had mentioned the point that he wanted to write something, maybe even as just as an exercise, but write something that he thought the television networks in the UK simply would not carry and would not produce. So instead of just writing things because they would be produced and shown, write the thing that you want to be there that no one would be willing to actually make. And that was what he was doing with Edge of Darkness, was writing the right kind of thing that he wanted to see, even though he was assuming that it would never actually be produced. And of course, in the end, that was not the case, and it was picked up, which was nice. In fact, he was encouraged to develop it by Jonathan Powell, a BBC producer, head of drama and serials. And based on that, he completed a full script for it. And the project was handed to producer Michael Waring, who brought it to a young director, Martin Campbell, who would go on to make GoldenEye and Casino Royale, he's currently shooting the Green Lantern movie. So someone who would turn into a very well-respected director indeed. And it was actually given a £2 million budget, which for a television serial in the mid-80s must have been enormous.
It seems enormous, doesn't it? I mean, I can never quite work out what those prices would be like compared with other television productions at the time, but it seems like a huge budget for a BBC TV show in the 80s.
Well, the difference that it makes, and you can see this from looking at the DVD extra features, and you can see it from watching Edge of Darkness as well, is this was shot like a film rather than being shot like a TV show would have been shot at the time. It was shot like a British film, but nonetheless, it was done in a way that you would do a film. It was not done in a way that you would do an episode of Doctor Who or a TV serial like Day of the Triffids or something like that. It was done much more like a film, which makes it an interesting contrast and something that is relatively unique in how it looks and how it feels. It comes out as being something that really looks quite good.
Yes, it's all up there on the screen, isn't it? So it was produced by the BBC, but it was co-produced with an organisation called Lionheart Television International, who actually were a BBC offshoot anyway. They were part of the BBC mainly involved in overseas international productions and distributions. And they're still around, but they're now called BBC Worldwide Americas, I believe.
People in the US and Canada who were watching Doctor Who in the 80s, early 90s, whenever, will remember the Lionheart logo at the end of every show.
Ah, right, okay. So it's more familiar to you abroad, yes. And then it was a 6 months production. So again, as you say, a bit like producing a film. And it was mostly shot in 1984, and they went to obviously to London for the Corridors of Power sequences, to Yorkshire for the sequences in the Craven's sort of home turf, but also they shot in Scotland and in Wales. So a big production, as you said, Brian, a big sort of epic scale television production.
They were doing things like going into coal mines for location filming and things like that. So this, for British television at the time, this was a major production.
And they even built quite a big set down a coal mine as well, didn't they? They had to build something down there.
Right. And something else that they had happening in this that was quite remarkable was the score, the incidental music score, which was written by Eric Clapton with Michael Kamen. And it was actually chopped out to Eric Clapton, who decided to do it, and he brought in Michael Kamen to help with it. But that, in many ways, changed everything. The two of them wrote this haunting electric guitar theme that had this sort of a electric bluesy guitar sound with strings behind it, or synthesizer strings behind it, that gave you something very rich and sort of brought out some of these darker themes and worked well with Craven in his mourning. And that gave it a very different and unusual feel that added a lot to it. And it was released as a single and as an album, which I understand actually did very well at the time and was quite popular in record sales.
Absolutely. And it's a brilliant and haunting piece of music. Probably a major part of the success of Edge of Darkness. I mean, we keep talking about great pieces of music when we talk about these British Invaders television shows, and here's another one. And in fact, I mean, I liked, when I watched the show in the 80s, I liked the music so much, I was one of the people who bought the single. Such a great piece of music, which I'm, you know, we'll have a clip of in the show. It's fantastic.
Do you still have the single?
Probably, yes, in probably one of those boxes in the attic, Brian. It's probably still up there. Probably worth about threepence, but yes. So, Edge of Darkness was written in 1983, it was filmed in 1984, and then finally in November and December of 1985, it was broadcast on the BBC Two channel over in six parts, obviously over 6 weeks, but was very soon afterwards rebroadcast on BBC One. And we'll talk about some of the reasons for that in our next episode as we go on to discuss some of the reaction to Edge of Darkness.
Yeah, it's a hint to say that getting a rebroadcast that quickly and getting a BBC Two show rebroadcast on BBC One is usually a sign of success.
Yes, things are going well when you move to BBC One. So next time, we will continue to talk about the story and we will get into some of the developments of the story, but we're going to try and keep it strictly spoiler free. As we've said, we're going to talk about the reaction to the broadcasts. We're going to go on and talk about the movie version because, as you know, there's recently been a film remake of Edge of Darkness. And perhaps quite importantly, we'll try and discuss Sam's question for us on Facebook as to whether Edge of Darkness is science fiction television at all.
Yes, and if it's not science fiction television, is it related to sci-fi? And as I've mentioned before, there are some sci-fi elements that come into play in the final episode of the serial. So that is something that we will talk about next time. And we may not be 100% spoilers free, but we'll do what we can. We'll keep it pretty close.
Okay.
But in the meantime, you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. Thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Please join us next time. This is Eamon in England saying goodbye.